Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of that galaxy and our galaxy, this is Force Center Presents Other Center. I'm Ken Napzok, and I almost did it again, offline content.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and can I just share what happened?
Share what happened.
I just love it. We always record, as Ken says, live to tape from his broadcasting days, and very rarely change anything. But sometimes in our intros, we fumble and then we do start over. I've done it many times, but Ken just had a great one. Ken did it from the center of the galaxy. Force Center Prevents, not Presents, Prevents. So if you need some preventative measures, we're here for you.
We're here indeed. We're here. Yes. Anyways. Hi, friends. Hi, Joseph. Hi, Jen. Hey, you're here.
Yes. I am here. I'm happy to be here. This is going to be fun.
This is our questions of the other episode. We got some great questions here. One, I had the shortest note ever, and one, I had to stop myself, Joseph. So
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I think I know probably which one was longer and which one was shorter, but yeah, well, maybe I'll be surprised.
I want to remind you, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. You know, they've got over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We have a 4center recommends, an other center recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us right here, right now. Joseph, do you have one?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to repeat a book I have recommended multiple times because, hey, that's what we used to do with those other Galaxy books. Inspired by the wonderful tweet I got from our friend Mark Knope, who actually got the physical book. But you can check out the audiobook of The Unexpected Mrs. Polifax. I love this mystery series. It is so in the spirit of 4center. About an older woman who's already lived a quite full life and then just decides, you know what I need in my life? I want to work for the CIA. And the adventure continues from there. So if that sounds interesting to you, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. That is the Audible.
The Audible, the recommendation. We're also having our ask segment focus on a Patreon page, but also a plug. We can tell you about that. If you support on Patreon, any level, you are going to be in the audience for a live life ranked taping on Friday, September 8th at 2 p.m. Pacific. Unlisted link. We'll hang out there and we're going to cover a big one. Our top five desserts, our lists are ready to go. We're going to release this episode later to the public, but you can be there, interact with us as we record it. And this is part of the perks of supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/4center, which is just, we appreciate everyone who's been on this adventure from the beginning to now, jumped on, jumped off. We're glad you're here and we thank you for your support. But if you'd like to consider supporting, go to patreon.com/4center. There you go. Joseph, we got some big questions today.
We do. I'm very excited for the Patreon. I'm up to three desserts and I got two. I still need to make some decisions on. So I'll have to do some just exploration this week to figure out what makes the spot. But for now, we're going to go to those questions. We have a ton of great questions from patrons on Patreon. If you want to ask a question, just go to the post page and scroll down until you see a picture of Ken looking happy at fish. Cooked fish. And we're excited to get to all these questions. But the first one we have today is from Paul Murphy. And Paul says, my son is called Joshua because of the Joshua tree. Have you named any kids or pets after bands, albums, musicians, songs, etc.? Ken, is this a question that you have a short answer to?
No.
No, this is the one you have along, which just makes me want to ask, like, obviously Jennifer has children. Ken and I do not. But Ken, have you ever had an opportunity to name someone else's kids? Have you?
I've tried. But even then, no, none of it ever serious. Including pets, all either inherited names. We have Baxter and Francis. I had no choices in that. Before that, Ratsy, which was actually Adelaide, which was named after a character. But, that happened decades before I met Grace. So and every other animal in the past, I was a kid. So it's like we had a black poodle, like a really like jet black poodle. So I named it Inky because it looked like ink. I was seven. Like, that's always
Inky. That's really, really great. I love that. So, Jennifer, since you have actual children, how do you relate to this question? Was there a consideration of bands, albums, music?
You know, I did toy with Scarlet because of Scarlet Begonias by the Grateful Dead. But then I was like, I think of Scarlett Johansson, so it just didn't quite, or Scarlet Fever. And so it's like, no, even like Sugar Magnolia is another of their songs. So I thought Magnolia, I liked the name Maggie. I think that's a really cute name. My husband was like, no. So no, I ended up naming one of my kids after a Star Wars character. Both of my pets are named after Star Wars characters. We have an outdoor cat that's been named after a video game, Zelda. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. I feel like music was such an important part of my life when I was younger that everything was named after that. You know, like random things, I would just name it after a song or a band. But now my life is podcasts. So things have changed.
This is my daughter, I love listening. This is my daughter, Rode Microphone.
right. This is my other daughter, Keep It, one of my favorite podcasts.
This is Marcus. My son, My Favorite Murder. Oh, no, that's not.
No. Right. So very different time now.
Yeah,
absolutely. For me, I don't have any children. I think I would consider Dean for a son, partially inspired by Dean Martin, but also just I think Dean Scrimshaw, you know, it's got a nice ring to it. Although the thing with Dean is that it always sounds like they are in charge of something at a college. Yeah. when I was in college, there was a actual Dean Martin. So that's why I'm like, we need to run this by Dean Martin. Like, okay, cool. Great. I know I've told this story before on Four Center, so apologies for those of you who have heard it before. But my beloved Chihuahua that I had growing up was named Nico, and that was a mix of, at the time, my mother was extremely obsessed with the soap opera All My Children, and she liked the character Nico. My brother and I were really into the seminal cult, not even cult anymore, the very important rock album Velvet Underground and Nico. And right. So we're like, sure, we'll go along with mom's fantasy that this is about the soap opera character, but we know that Nico is named after the singer, which, you know, in those days we knew nothing about the singer. It was just, we liked that album, we liked that name. But the story that goes along with this is I really pushed hard to have my beloved Chihuahua named Axel, after Axl Rose. But my mother laid down the rule that I've used in comedy bits, that you have to test all names by yelling them and find out what it might sound like if you yell it. And she was like, I'm not, every night when we take the dog out at 10:30, I'm not having the whole neighborhood think I'm yelling asshole again and again.
Right.
Asshole, get in here. Asshole, it's cold outside,
oh
asshole.
Oh my God.
Get in here, asshole.
That's
what did you do, asshole?
Love that.
Yeah. So I'm obsessed with that. I did I wrote a pilot that I tried to sell, and there was a Chihuahua character, and I named the character Axel to heal the wound. So at some point, in real life or in a fantasy made up thing, I will have a Chihuahua named Axel.
One day. Love that. I know my answer's for him, but I just, it's a great question, Paul and Joshua, because Joshua Tree, both the tree and the album, you paint two things if you want. I can never choose one. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have stories? And then we'll move on from this question, but I'm curious, do either of you have stories of where your actual name came from? Ken, do you have like a family history of why you're Ken?
I think my mom just liked it. She wanted to, my name was supposed to be Sasha. She was, really interested in my dad's heritage, the Ukrainian Circassian, kind of just overall Russian in a general sense, which isn't accurate, but which is how I was raised, as I've talked about before. So there was a lot of that. And my sister was going to be Katya. And funny thing about America in the 50s, they didn't treat immigrants well. Unfortunately, that changed, right? So my dad coming over in 51 in the height of, you know, the Red Scare, being a little, quote, Russian kid, was badly, attacked, harassed, beaten, abused, all those kind of things at school. So he had his first language. A language was Russian. He no longer speaks it. Like, it just kind of got beat out of him. And he refused. This is mid-70s, still fresh in his mind. And he refused. I don't want that happening to my kids. I think it would have been okay. Times changed enough. Cold War ended, right? We're all good. So, I'm glad my name, no disrespect to any Sashas. I know many Sashas. Kenneth is something I'm happy with, but, that's the story how I got to that, but could have been something
interesting. How about you, Jennifer? Is there a story for your name?
My aunt died the month before I was going to be born. So my mom says, the story varies. Sometimes I've been named after my Aunt Jenny, but then sometimes she's like, oh, there was a very famous actress from this, from that time period that she really liked. And quite frankly, everyone from my generation was named Jennifer. Everywhere I go, I hate my name. I have no connection to it. I have toyed with changing it for a period of time. A manager wanted me to change my name to something more, quote unquote, ethnically ambiguous.
So, I mean, I get that with Landa, but that's ridiculous with Jennifer.
Yeah, he was like, he wanted me to have something sound, quote, more ethnic. That's what he wanted.
He wanted you to lean into the stereotypes.
Yes, exactly. Right. Because Jennifer is too boring, which I agree. Jennifer is boring. And actually, just the other night, I was like, what if I did change my name? Like, nobody remembers my name. They call me Jessica. They call me Julia. Like, nobody, because Jennifer is so common and boring. I don't like it.
It was from that period of time, right? I have a cousin.
Yes.
Name that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Zero.
So many. Yeah.
Look, if sometime we're doing the intro to Other Center and like, I'm Ken, I'm Joseph, and you're suddenly like, and I'm Touch of Gray, we'll be like, okay, that's fine.
Sophia Landa. That's what he wanted me to be called. Sophia. Because he's like, oh, you could be Italian or you could be Mexican. They won't know. The casting people won't know.
I like Joseph, and my brother is Joshua, not after Joshua Tree, and I think they probably just like J names. But then when I remember asking as a kid, and my great grandmother's name was Josephine, but then my parents also told me, like, but also you were born at St. Joseph Hospital, and the doctor who delivered you was named Joseph.
Wow.
Oh, at the time, I thought, like, oh, that's cool. But now, now it almost just feels like you couldn't think of anything else. It's like, if the doctor's name was Lamp, would my name be Lamp?
Man in Canoe, Wayne's World 2-bit. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a shock to learn about the biblical history of Joseph. Anyway,
or his Technicolor dream coat.
Oh,
yes, definitely heard some of that in my life. But
I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. We thank you, Paul, for the great names question. We're going to move on to a question from Lou Stout. And this one, this is a great question from Lou, so I included it. But we are probably kind of riding on the razor's edge of, you know, what what is being talked about is made by an independent company and what might be made by a company making struck work. So we acknowledge that we're on the razor's edge here of what we're trying to do. But it was a great question from Lou that I think we're all passionate about, so I wanted to include it. Lou said, I love a good docuseries. The Last Dance, The G-Word, and The Challenger One are some of my favorites. What are some of your favorite documentaries, and or what topic or person would you like to see a deep dive documentary on or about? Ken, your middle name has been documentary lately. You've really been enjoying them. So let's start with you.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I had to stop. And some of them have been talked about a lot by me lately. And I'm definitely in my Ken Burns face. I just saw someone tweet, like, I've reached the middle age. I watched nothing but Ken Burns docs portion of my life. And I'd already watched and Baseball came out in 1994. And I'm actually rewatching Ken Burns Baseball right now just to have on in the background. I own it on Blu-ray, all 10 innings. I also bought it on Amazon Prime, so I don't have to go find the Blu-rays, and I'm just sitting there staring at it. It's comfort, but it's also great. It's not just the story of baseball. It's the story of America from almost the beginning, but it really 1860s to 1990, and it's not always a great story, and the doc is very honest about that, and that's why I like it. It's also heartwarming and heartbreaking, and it's not just a story about a sport. So there's that, and I was moved by the Vietnam doc, the Ken Burns Vietnam. I think they're all music. Oh God, they are. Wow. Oh God, I gotta. Anyways, I'm obsessed with history of the Eagles, and I'm not an Eagles fan of the band. I'm really not. I mean, I'm a greatest hits fan. Like, sure, I know the lyrics to Take It Easy as well. Winslow, Arizona, got it. But it's just one of the ultimate stories of humans who work with each other and love each other and care about each other and then hate each other and then fight each other and try to find peace and find peace and lose it. It's a fascinating human story in one of the great rock bands of our time. And it's a, I think it's a big two-parter. Mark Ellis and I always joke, it's our comfort duck on the road. We'll just put that on. We were in La Jolla last year with Jed Sturger in this Airbnb. And she's just, it was like 2 a.m. And Mark and I are like having chicken sandwiches, watching the History of the Eagles doc for like the fifth time. She's like, this is not the thought. The road life, I thought. She's like, I'm going to bed. And we're like, all right, Don Felder's coming on. there's that. But I'll roll through them quickly so we don't turn into a deep episode. I highly recommend, if any, no one has seen Edgar Wright's The Sparks Brothers doc. Sparks are a long-running, very strong, going strong right now band, two brothers, Ron and Russell Mayall. And I same thing, not super familiar with their music growing up, knew of them, but they're highly influential, but they're also highly tragic in the fact that they so close to success, but others succeeded and not them, and it nearly broke them. And it's a doc that left me crying at one point, sobbing pretty hard for them as they went to a low point and fought their way out of it, and truly about artistic integrity. And it's also a very unique doc. Very funny. Highly recommend that. I've talked a lot about the 1971, the year the music changed everything doc. David Bowie, the last 5 years is a great doc. It's very inspiring, very insightful. Joseph, you and I talk often of our love and appreciation of Lady Gaga. That really began for me when I finally sat down and watched Gaga 5'2", which is a fantastic doc covering most of 2016 up to their Super Bowl performance. But there's a sequence in it in which the meat dressed lady, right, walked out, and they do a super cut of her walking out of like hotels or apartments and events to the fans, and what they want from her, what they take from her, what she gives them. And then it's intercut with present day and all the screaming, the shouting, the da-da-da. And she gets into the car and the car door slams and there's silence. And she just, she just breathes. And that got me. I understood who this artist was and what it means to be an artist at that level. And it's a stunning, I think, a stunning little intimate portrait, as they might say. And then the final one, an all-time great. I don't want it to be overlooked because there's some great ones that have come out since. But the Beatles anthology aired on TV as a giant event in 1995. The story of that band's been told over and over and over again. And I really enjoy what Peter Jackson did recently with them. I thought that was wonderful, but there was something powerful about the three at the time surviving Beatles come together to tell their story and put some new music out there. And it's always one of my favorites. So there you go, Lou. I'll stop there.
It is a great list. I just recently watched Gaga 5'2", and I love the sequence you're talking about, and with the added power that what she's doing during the documentary is I don't want to have as much of the artifice, as much of the theater. I want to pull it back and be myself a little bit more and literally have, you know, not masks, not makeup. This is me. And will my fans accept me? And hey, Lady Gaga's she's got a little bit more going on than our little podcast. But it was like, hey, we just had to do that. Will you still like us if we take off the meat dress of Star Wars for a little while and just be ourselves? And thank you, everyone who is being here with us and for us. Jennifer, what are documentaries that you like? And then we'll talk also about the other part of Lou's question of what we do want documentaries about that maybe don't exist yet. But for now, what are your faves?
I really feel like I used to watch a lot of true crime documentaries, and not even so much documentaries, but more so like the reality show. So like First 48. Remember that show, The First 48? I don't know if it's still on, or like the Cold Case kind of files.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I kind of went to like more salacious docuseries. So like E! True Hollywood Story, VH1's Behind the Music. I used to love those shows. And I really think that music documentaries and sports documentaries are the most interesting because they either end in triumph or in like death. It's such extremes. And another docuseries I really liked was Hard Knocks about the NFL training camp. Because it's just like it's such a different world than I'm used to or even know about. It's like, wow, is that what they do? It's also why The Last Dance, as you mentioned, Lou, was really, really good, although I still need to finish it. But yeah, those are my favorites, which are not really documentaries. They're like reality TV. Hold on.
Yeah, but there's a bleeding there of, yeah, Which right. is it? Right. Yeah, a few for me. I think it's an old classic nature show, I guess, but documentary. But Planet Earth, and, you know, beautiful, powerful. I will always remember the first time I saw it. I believe it's the first season that, you know, I think it's maybe around the sixth or seventh episodes. If you're watching them, you've been lulled into like, yes, it's the researchers and scientists who have discovered all this over years and making new discoveries. But you're just listening to Attenborough, who somehow magically this voice knows everything about the natural world and everything is in order and makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then there's the episode with the zombie ants. And the groups of monkeys that every once in a while just go across the way and violently murder one another. And then Attenborough goes, we have no idea why they do that. And it was the most haunting, terrifying thing. It's like Attenborough suddenly saying, there is no God. We're all making it up. And you're like, ah! How can he not know something? So those are beautiful and insightful and I think have great implicit messages or explicit messages about the environment and climate and all that. Couple other for me, my wife is a big fan of the Bee Gees, and I had a lot of various negative associations growing up with them, and that I learned where those came from by watching this documentary. That it was that a lot of the stuff that I grew up with was frankly sexist, homophobic, pushback on music that it was truly alive and truly celebrated and being used in different cultures. And some of that pushback was like, is always, hey, anybody can just not like the music of the Bee Gees. That's fine. But that this sudden attack on disco had a lot of ugliness to it. But that's also that's one of those great music docs. That's about a band, but it's specifically the most recent one, 'cause they've had a couple of Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? It is also about surviving as you lose family members. Powerful, a moving gut punch. Go for it, Ken.
No, it's, the disco sucks thing is people need to look into that a lot more. And there's a famous baseball incident with the Chicago White Sox hosting a blow up Dynamite disco records, and there's I don't know where it is, there's a doc that just focuses on that. It could be an ESPN 30 for 30 thing. I don't know.
And that incident, that incident is heavily featured in this.
Yeah. Yes. And it highlights what was fueling that. But filtered down to us by the time the 80s come about, disco sucks, rap is crap, all that kind of stuff. I'll even say throwing it, like, I was raised to dislike country, but it's like, it's about not valuing the experiences and perspectives of people on a very major level.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really powerful. And one of those documentaries that did make me really think about, like, I have to remember that some things that I have been sort of taught from a very young age, I should question where they actually came from, because I was too young to investigate. Why was I told that? Why was that truth that I accepted? You know, I accepted it because I was four, but now I can question it, you know?
Great doc.
A couple other for me. There's a great documentary, two-parter, called Sinatra All or Nothing at All. His daughter, Nancy Sinatra, is one of the producers. This is one of those, it's about Sinatra, but one of the things that's fascinating about Sinatra and a lot of people of his age is it's the story of the 20th century. Because it's going through what was the immigrant experience like? What was it like to be Italian at that time? In Hoboken, then through the Great Depression, through World War II, through the sort of the Vegas party years of that generation, to the sudden, just out of left field, your culture is, the Beatles are here and you were a Titan and now you're nothing. Bye. Nobody likes your music anymore. You know, almost to a month that it happens and it's over. Or is it? And finding a way through all of that. There's so much in it. But for me, as a big Sinatra fan and somebody who has read a lot about his work, it's a really great, honest documentary that celebrates what was wonderful and beautiful about him, but it doesn't shy away from some of the challenging parts of his life and his personality and his career. So I just thought it was incredibly well balanced. If you're curious about him, final one for me is a short film. I think it's only like 90-ish minutes, called The Art Life. Following David Lynch for a little while. And David Lynch has this obsession with since he was young, he wanted the art life. And it isn't what that means to him is you absolutely prioritize your art, and it's sacred, and you make time for it no matter what. And and it's going through that philosophy a little bit and just following him through a little chunk of his life. So that's a big one for me too.
Love that.
So thank you, Lou, for letting us list our favorite documentaries. But now let's talk about the future. Jennifer, what's a deep dive documentary that maybe doesn't exist that you'd like to see about a topic or a person?
I forgot one. My favorite documentary is The Kid Stays in the Picture. It's about Robert Evans, who is a big movie producer, and his marriage to Ally McGraw and his rise and fall in Hollywood. Oh my gosh, this is so freaking good. I love watching that one. Okay, that's my favorite. One that I'm interested in that I found out they're actually making a docuseries about it at a premium TV network, Lisa Frank. I don't know if you guys know who Lisa Frank is, right? From the 80s and 90s for her prints of like leopard and purples and really vibrant colors. And she did stationery and stickers and all sorts of things like folders, things like that. But apparently she's a really terrible boss, and it kind of sounds like a not nice person, which is a huge contrast to like her cheery and inspirational stationery. Yeah. So I actually found on Reddit, there was the producer of this docuseries was like, hey, if any of you guys are ex-employees of Lisa Frank, contact me because I'm doing a series and I'd love to talk to you about it. So it's coming. I'm really looking forward to it because I want to know all the tea.
The darkness behind the unicorns. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Ken, you are the most docu-obsessed among us. So I'm going to have you close. So I will throw out two ideas along the same lines of Sinatra, but with a different perspective. I would love a really great, really detailed biography or documentary about Sammy Davis Jr. A lot of the information is out there in his own autobiographies, multiple, and you can find different specials on them, but I think some of them are kind of surface. Maybe there's a great detailed deep one. I don't know. But he's, I think people know trivia about him. They know jokes about him. If you're our age, his career survived very successfully into the 70s, but he did a few more kind of like novelty songs or songs we'd call schmaltzy. And I feel like there's so much that people don't, that a general culture doesn't remember about him as an incredibly powerful, talented, amazing singer, amazing jazz artist, amazing virtuoso of somebody who made their entire life entertainment and love of entertainment and love of making an audience happy, but also just a fascinating life with everything he went through with the ups and downs of racism as he lived through the 20th century and found great success, but still found great heartbreak. And I think there's so much in his story that would be, we're watching it, his story, but we're watching our story as we go through his life.
That's great. Yeah, that'd be great. Mm.
So that's a big one. And the other one is a little bit jokey, but I was thinking about a topic that I'm truly interested in. So here's my jokey pitch. I want a documentary called Touch Grass, The Death of the Public Space.
I love that.
I think Hillary Clinton's been on about this in tweets. So she's probably working on a documentary, and I'm sure there are things about it. But I really don't mean this as the kids these days, we're all on our phones. I think it's less about phones, and I think it's more about various corporate influences wanting to make things cheaper, easier, you know, hire fewer employees. And so we're losing spaces that used to be more communal. I think it can be harder to find your neighborhood bar. I think, you know, all of Target's being almost all go self-checkout, you lose that little bit of connection. And I think there is something happening here, not from smartphones, but from corporate greed that is making it so the sort of little moments where we just had together. One of the big old bowling alleys just shut down recently in LA, right? Like, that kind of stuff, like literally spaces that used to be just about people gathering, there seems to be fewer of, and the quality and the focus of them is different.
Yeah. And that was a great place. I used to love going hanging out there. Great darts. Yeah. A real crappy, wonderful hamburger.
I want a crappy, wonderful hamburger right now. All right. All right. Ken, documentary Knapsack, what is the future docs you want?
Yeah. Look, I'm going to sit on a couple of them, because I don't know how I would pull it off, but I would. There's one there's a couple I've always talked about. I'd like to try that, but one kind of focused I'll just say it's a history of politics and pop culture. I just love to delve into that. So I'll pitch to Ken Burns. I'll see what he says. there's that one. There's a couple set in the galaxy far, far away that I think we could use, about maybe characters that are maligned and actors who played them.
That'd be good.
Yeah, for me, I'm trying to stick to something I know and love, and the name's come up a lot here in Other Center and has before, but being the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan that I am, and a Douglas Adams fan, and just his fascinating life and history, as short as it was, 49 years of age is when he passed away. I really would love a long form doc, and if it's just 1 2-hour doc, great, but I think it could be 2 or 3 episodes. There's so much. That book I crowdfunded finally came in a couple years ago. I pledged to it, and it's a fascinating look at his personal effects and letters and notes following his death. And it's just this guy predicted the future in a weird way, just with tech and everything. But there's a sad a wonderful foreword by Stephen Fry, but a sad note of Douglas Adams passed away in 2001, and Stephen Fry's like, you never got to pinch the screen of your smartphone. You never got to take a FaceTime call. You never got to see all these things that you thought possible when others didn't. And that's one of the tragedies. And just to think of it in those terms. So I think it's a fascinating life, just as a writer, as an entertainer, as an artist. But looking at the reasons, that he did all that. I grew up thinking Hitchhikers was this funny book with some insightful stuff, but sure, it was funny. It was way more insightful than it was intended to be humor. And I just love it. I love it. So I think he's got a fascinating, and there's a lot of people, myself included, who'd be willing to talk about the influence and legacy on Ken.
I do not think you'd be alone. That's a great one. Mm-hmm. Any other picks pitches that I want to hear the private ones off air that,
The one thing I'll say about docs is I've got a lot of music ones and everything, but I'm a sucker for them. I'm a sucker for studying humans and the human condition and what makes us do it. And I study it, but I don't know the answers. It's part of the fascination I have with docs. So like Big Lou, you could pitch anything. You could pitch the history of barbecue sauce and I'd watch it because there's always a story to tell. It's why I like those shows you're talking about, Jen. I like a lot of the cooking ones. Let's look at, it's an hour on tacos. Oh, that sounds great. I love tacos. Oh God, you getting some big issues or real powerful stories. We all have those stories and docs bring it out. And that's why I'm a sucker for them.
I think that's great. Yeah, I think we tend to be taught that history is a straight line of like a person had an idea and then they did it and it was great. And it's never that.
No.
Never that straightforward.
Yeah. Love it.
All right. That is our big documentary talk. We're taking a break and we'll be back with a big question about art. Back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome back to Other Center, Cues of the Other, episode 594 in an ongoing series of our main show. That number does not affect the other over 600 plus episodes, 700 plus episodes.
Wow.
We've been here a bit. We've been here and we're still going, dare I say, even stronger, because now we get to talk about other things, that what they mean to us, and you get to learn a little bit more from ourselves. And Joseph, this next question might pull the curtain back even a little bit more.
I think so. Is this the one, Ken, that you have a short answer to?
No. The pets was the shortest.
Okay.
I didn't even realize I was listing docs. I was just like, oh, I've been asked a doc question. Oh, God.
Yep. Pulled the ripcord on that one with the documentary question. This final question, which is a big one, is kind of an overall question with lots of little mini questions in it. It comes to us from 8984M. 8984M says, is creatives what drives you creatively? Like, when you get an idea, how do you motivate yourself to actually execute your idea? How do you extract your mind of doubts, extricate your mind of doubts and fears to create art? Do you ever feel that there just isn't enough time to create something that you wish to create? I ask this because I feel like I'm walking a career path I don't necessarily want to, but I feel as though the barrier to getting out is too high. Did any of your career skills ever come in handy later in your art making? So there are a lot of great ways to take this. So Jennifer, I'm going to throw it to you for an opening statement, and then maybe we can drill down on any more specific questions within this. So where do you go? What was your initial reaction to this overall question?
Yes, I think that career skills can absolutely, whatever they are, can come in handy into your art making, whether it's, for me, it was waiting tables, right? And meeting different personalities. Or when I was at E, I was a producer. So putting together segments, that's now helped me with creating videos. So yes, 100%. That is a wonderful thing to use those career skills later in your art. But I also think about, like, what type of art are you going to be creating? Is a person, I have a friend who's a painter, and once he starts, he has to paint for hours. Otherwise, he loses his flow. Whereas his wife, who's a writer, she blocks out 30 minutes of her time or an hour here, hour there, right? And she just literally forces herself to write just for that certain chunk, right? She's got to get that done. And then for me, I have an hourly calendar and I write down how long I want to work on my video, what that means, how many hours of research, how many of editing, blah, 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 blah. So that's kind of, I don't know if that's my opening statement because I have a lot more to say. But
oh, yeah, no, that's a great place to start. I will join you in addressing this that final part of the question of any career skills come handy later in art making. Yeah, I think almost everything you learn from a practical sense, even from the weirdest unrelated to art making job, I think practical or inspiration comes from it. So I think, you know, if you have to have career skills or maybe you're in a career that isn't the perfect match and you want out eventually, that's all understandable. But I think there's also like every experience we're having can pile into our art, either artistically or practically. The one I think about a lot is I realize that I don't know if my brain is wired this way or I just got impatient, but I think a lot of times I think about art as like, I just want to focus on the part that I want to do. And there are all these other parts around it that you have to do. And I had that epiphany working at Kinko's, because when I worked at Kinko's, now FedEx office, it was very high pressure. You had to turn around things fast, particularly huge orders from corporations that used to come in at the time and were our bread and butter, where you make a lot of money. And, you know, executives would come storming in and be like, how fast can you get this done? And I screwed up a couple times because I just do the math on the how long it would take to make the copies, because like that's what we're doing, is we're making copies. But the actual process of literally putting the copies in the boxes could take almost as long as making the copies sometimes. And I realized like, oh, my brain didn't want to accept the boxes part was part of this. Right. And that really helped me as a producer thinking about art of like, you know, when you think of art, it's like, yes, it's I'm at the canvas and I'm, you know, making strokes. Like, no, also you're taking reference pictures and you're buying your paints and you're packaging up the canvas to send somewhere and like remembering that it's all part of it. That was something that I learned. Ken, where do you begin with this? That final question or general overall thought, however you'd like to begin.
The easiest one might be the career thing. Yeah, I think your career skills do come in handy in ways you probably don't even know or ways you're very aware of, as Jen and Joseph have both explained here. I think because that's just who you are. You're a human and you're going to take that into your art and how I sometimes don't understand why, like my ability to write a liability report in which I can make a mall not responsible for you slipping on a puddle of water. I don't know what that helps me in stand up, but I was pretty good at it. Sorry. But that's my point is I think for me, a lot of it, it's just, you do carry it forward and how you structure things, how you look at it. I struggle sometimes with, I'm a little bit of an inspiration creator versus a structured occupational creator. I get up and write every day. I don't always do that. I easily am pushed off that if I'm tired, annoyed, angry, hungry, you know, like, but then it explodes out of me. When I kind of do that, method, what's that? It's named after tomato, right? With the 20 minutes, you set a 25 minute timer, you get 25 minutes work done, then you get a 5 minute break and you do it again. That's actually, I don't do that all the time, but that kind of stuff does help me. Overall though, I'll say this, I've accidentally chosen artistic integrity. I didn't mean to. I want to be a sellout and a rich success in whatever. And that's not been the case, but along the way, especially where we are now, where I don't mean to sound super important. I'm not, but like, I really like what I do. And I really like what I talk about. We talked about earlier this week of, but sometimes it can be a comfort and I need, or it's too adventurous and I've changed and I got to make sure, I am entertaining and keeping my audience engaged. But, I just feel I'm in a better spot with knowing what I want to say, because that's what my art is. It's how I communicate with the world. I don't know how otherwise. I really don't know how. I'm a boring conversation if there's no microphones there. So I how do I marry all that? But there's some other stuff to talk about, but I found myself going, you know what? I'm just going to be one of those artists that influenced a lot of other people and sat quietly in his corner. I guess that's what I'm I don't mean that negatively. I just mean like that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, in this question to me, there's a lot of individual questions. We can tackle any of the individual questions that shine to us, but looking at the overall question, I feel like 8984M is wrestling with what I think a lot of people who want to be creative wrestle with, that there are, external barriers like, hey, I need a career. Their time is limited. But then there's also the internal barriers about motivation and finding a system that works for you. So maybe we could kind of break it down that way, talking about getting past external barriers and getting past internal barriers. Does that make sense to both of you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's start with it. We'll end with the internal, because in some ways that's the more powerful. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the Jennifer, let's talk about the externals. How do you wrestle with those various? We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Those external barriers of time, defining your goals, feeling like I need to do this for career right now, but what I really want to do artistically is a little over there. How do you wrestle with all of that?
I just have to do it, because I have to literally force myself, because there's a lot of reasons why I don't need to do it, or I don't have the time to do it, but I do have the time. So it means either I'm doing it when my kids are, you know, playing video games, if making a video, or I'm waking up early, or I'm staying up late editing, and I block out a chunk of time. And now I'm really trying to get into Google spreadsheets and things like that, because I'm not that type of person. Some people are really good at keeping themselves accountable, or all those things, or organization. That is not me. So I have to try and create a system for myself. Okay, this is one I want to put out this week. So when do I need to film that? How can I maximize my time so that if I have my camera, my lights set up, I can maybe do two or three videos. So that's one day. And then another day is just going to be all editing. So then I can knock that out, right? So it's just being so much more intentional. Whereas when I was younger, I would just kind of go based on my inspiration, or, you know.
There it is.
right. It's like you're kind of just led where the wind takes you. And as you get older and you have more responsibilities, you can't do that. You have to be so much more intentional, which goes against kind of the nature of many of us as artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's great. Intentional is such a great word.
Great word.
Yeah. Do you have more to say about the external barriers, Jen?
No, that's the external. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really great. I want to hop in there. I think that there's a lot of advice that is out there. Some of it, I think, is people just trying to sell things. Yeah. You know, some of the art guru stuff, I'm going to be honest. But on social media, I think there's a ton of people who have the greatest intention, who are trying to say, here's a system that works for me. But I think the important thing is figuring out what works for you, and not falling into the sort of trap of like, this artist I like recommended, you know, the sand clock method of an hour a day, if that works for you, great. If it doesn't, break that sand clock against the wall and do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And for me, I have tortured myself a lot about, I want to be like, I just want to write a little bit every day. And I just, that works for me every once in a while, but I'm much more like the other person Jennifer was talking about, of like, I need to disappear into this world. And, I need a deadline, and I don't want it to be a rush or stressful, but like, if I can find a day that like, oh, my wife needs to work for a 12-hour day, this is what I'm doing today, and give it my entire focus. And that worked for me. Other times the 20 minutes a day worked for me. So I think one of the biggest things is to take the advice that is useful to you, and don't guilt yourself if that advice doesn't work. If you find it not working, throw it out the window and follow your gut, and whatever works for you to manage the time is what's most important. Mm-hmm. Ken, do you have thoughts on that?
I'm writing this all down. You guys being intentional, guilty. Yeah. I mentioned, a friend of mine told me about that method a couple years ago, and it was working, but it doesn't work for all the time. And sometimes, you know, I don't need a tomato clock to tell me what to do. I just need myself to tell me what to do. And when some things don't work, you just said it. Don't feel guilty. Don't beat yourself up. When I used to write a lot of screenplays, which was one of the reasons I originally moved to LA, I would unlock how to do it, right? Like, I just needed index cards and poster board. Got it. That worked for this script, and that's how I'm going to do it. And then it wouldn't work for the next one because it was a different idea or it was a different headspace or, you know, don't be locked into it, but also don't be afraid to embrace the structure of creative pursuits and Jen, you're saying some great stuff about being intentional. I had a pretty good weekend in terms of just like simple kind of relaxing weekend, but I also made a point to get things done, not just creative stuff, but some of that stuff around the house that we all struggle with. This isn't new, like I said, you know, but it's like I needed to fix a little corner that got nicked of a recent paint job in our bathroom. Like, and I had the paint sitting out for 5 days. I was like, today we're doing it. And I think I have to apply that creatively. And that's an external barrier where I just know some of my weaknesses. So if I'm going to film, I have my little sports card ASMR channel. It takes 3 minutes to set up for that shoot, but man, that is 3 minutes. It keeps me from doing it over and over. So what I know is if today, Sunday night, when things quiet down, cause I need things to be quiet, I'm going to record a video or two. I'll wake up Sunday morning and get my camera in position. And then I know when I come back 7 hours later, it'll be ready. And it seems silly and it seems, guy, what are you, lazy? You're not disciplined. I just know I need that. Some days, if I want to be more productive, I have to get up and put sneakers or shoes on if I, you know, have my workout gear or just get dressed. Cause if I have shoes on, I feel as though I'm more productive. When those slippers are on, man, I'll just play another round of Fortnite. You know?
Yeah. That's like the Kinko's boxing thing to me of like, it's this thing that doesn't seem like the main thing. But it's the work you need to do the work. A thing that I found on social media I would love to credit the person. I don't remember where I learned the phrase, but I really like this idea of parking downhill. Which means which is what you're both talking about. You're getting ready to do your work. In particular, for me, something like that of like especially when I need to start a new script, that it often helps me to just be like, well, the first thing I'm going to do is just pull together all my notes, and then when I get up the next morning, my notes are ready. Or like if you're in the middle of writing a scene or writing a script, start the next scene, even if it's one line. Before you stop for the day, and then it's easier to start because you're parked downhill. You've already got a little momentum.
That's great.
That's good.
Tattoo that one on you on your arm or shoulder. Park downhill.
Yeah, it's a real good one. Okay, so the external and the internal do bleed a little bit, but let's get into the real internal, which is where this question starts. Of how do you get past the fear and the anxiety, managing all the time and the expectations, all of it, to the heart of this question of when you get an idea, how do you motivate yourself to actually execute your idea and make it a reality? Jennifer, what's your internal journey of getting past that all?
This is something I've actually been really working on because I have what's called unrelenting standards, which is basically perfectionism, which means that I will spend way too long on something that could be done very quickly. And what I'm realizing is it just happened the other night. I was working on a video. I'd set a certain number of hours that I was going to work on it for, and that passed and it was done. It was ready to go, but I kept tinkering with it. You know, oh, let me see if I can add some music. Oh, I'm going to smooth out that transition. This is like a 58 second video. It just needs to be posted, right? And I'm doing that. And I'm like, why am I doing that? Oh, it's by me being a perfectionist, by me tinkering around. I am avoiding the feeling of releasing it into the world. The feeling of potentially being disappointed that nobody's going to watch it. The fear that somebody's going to get angry because I voiced my opinion. And so I feel like that is a constant barrier for me and where my time management skills get really out of whack. It's because I'm like, if it's perfect, if I spend a week on this 58 second video, then it's going to do really well. I'm like, you know, I'm putting on like an armor on myself, but actually it's way worse because I should spend like 3 weeks on a 58 second video. And nobody watches it. And you're like, oh shoot. So it's about time management. It's also enjoying the process. I am making this for myself. I'm not making this for the likes. It's all just like, you just got to put it out there, because the people who are successful are not perfect. They are consistent and they show up and they do the work. That's all that it is, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'll sometimes see like creators, I'm like, oh, their videos are so good. Oh, they have. Yeah, because this is like their 10th year of being a YouTuber. They have professional equipment, professional camera person, because they put in the work in the beginning. So that is a lesson for myself and maybe for some of you out there as well.
Yeah, I think that's such a great and honest examination of the fear. And I think that's mm-hmm. the biggest thing to me is I definitely have some other things I want to talk about with battling the internal blockages. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for me is accepting that doubt and fear are real. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes rational of like, you know, if you're making something and you're applying to a festival or whatever, yeah, you might not get in. It's an actual concern. Make it right. as good as you can. That's a rational concern. But it's more the irrational that get us of exactly what you're talking about, Jennifer, of like, but maybe if I change the shade of this slightly, it will be bulletproof.
Right.
And I think accepting that doubt and fear are real and that they will always plague you. And the game isn't defeat them and be fearless. It's how do I work with my own fear? How do I make a deal with it? And say, yep, I know it's there. I'm not trying to make you go away, but I can't let you stop me from making stuff fear. Mm-hmm. So how can I make a deal with you? And like, sometimes I'll do that for myself of like, there'll be details that like, I can't move on with the script unless I get the main character's name right. And I'll sit there being like, I've written one line of dialogue and now the name Drew feels wrong. And I've spent another 3 hours of my life Googling baby names from 1972, which I've done 1,000 bleeping times.
Right.
And sometimes just going like,
Bert.
Bert. Like, but this is my process. Yeah. And I'm gonna let myself do my process. But also just sometimes just for me, just sometimes just letting it be like, I'm terrified, but I'm writing. And that's all that matters. It's not about beating it. It's about getting past it. I think so many artists, when we get to see them at their height in their prime, they seem fearless, especially like somebody doing a huge, you know, music concert, changing outfits, the David Bowie. David Bowie seems fearless. He's not. He wasn't. He managed his fear. He accepted it. And didn't let it stop him from making things.
Mm-hmm.
But he had mm-hmm. the fear. All great artists have the fear. So I think that's the first step, is accepting that it's real and it's probably not going away. It's just about getting past it. Yeah. Kenneth, what do you feel about that?
Well, the 1971, the year the music changed everything, Doc, highlights Bowie's struggle to put himself on stage. The person he knew he was, he couldn't find a way to translate that to stage in 71. Jen, what did you say? Unrelenting standards?
Yes.
See, I have relenting standards. And I need to find, but it's tied into something bigger to get into. But I've also dealt with that. One of my longtime writing partners, we don't really write anymore with screenplays. I also lost an interest in screenplays over the years. That's a different podcast. But we had one script we worked on for 5 years. And wow. God bless him, he edited the first act for 5 years, where I eventually was like, we're done. Like, either not going to get any better or we need to do something else. And I'd get the email, hey, I was thinking about it. And what if we tried this? And those ideas aren't wrong, right? That's not a bad process. You need to edit. You need to relook at things. You need to go back and revisit it. But you could see after a while, it was what held him back. If we don't nail the first page of this script, we'll never sell it. True point, point taken, but also if we never complete the script, we'll never sell it.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's a very real thing. I suffer the other side of a little shoddy work because of something that's interwoven with a doubt thing. And doubt, you mentioned, Joseph, and it's not surprising that an artist would have some doubt. That's kind of the name of the game. But I have something that I'm trying to analyze, and maybe I should have back to therapy or just do a podcast on it. And it's something I inherited from my father. It's a little bit of a mental curse, I call it. I'm always on the outside looking in. So my dad is a talented, he was a 2D artist. He could have gone that career. He didn't, marriage, kids, and that kind of traditional life. He wasn't encouraged to go that way. Different conversation. But my dad can build speakers. And he would he'll be like, and they're top quality. He gets parts from all around the world. And he's like, he'll announce to me, I'm going to build them and sell them. I'm going to have a little side business. Great, dad. One gets sold. He doesn't do it again. He has like iPad and iPhone custom made stands. He's like, people love this. And I have one. They're great. He sold three. And it's just kind of this aw shucks mentality that I've had. And it ties to pursuits, you know, and I hope this is helpful to those out there, but like, I'll start with, I wanted to be a baseball player for a couple of years because, yeah, of course. And that wasn't going to happen. No one really told me, but I also could have gotten better. I could have practiced. I wasn't taken out to the field by my folks and encouraged to do that. So when I didn't make the baseball team in ninth grade, I remember I hung my head and went, well, yeah, that's what happens. It doesn't work out. And that has been put into me a little bit. There was some hardwiring. And Joseph, you and I have had offline conversations about I went and pursued the groundlings, and I was very successful, and I went to the training class like everyone else, and I got to the very end, and very now famous people told me I was very good, but then some now very famous people told me I wasn't, and I went on my shoulders and went, you're right, it doesn't work out. It's not supposed to work out. I sometimes get frustrated. I think Four Center is this longstanding influential podcast that influences other people, starts other people's shows, changes how people look at Star Wars. And then you watch other people zoom past us. And that's their journey. This is our journey. And it's not sour grapes, but I just hang my head and go, yeah, it's not supposed to work out. And I face that a lot. I don't know where it comes from. So that's the big internal hurdle. There's some doubt about it. Is this the right thing to do? But like, I love the podcast thing I'm doing. I love the little scripted comedy thing I did for 2 years. It lost views and people didn't like it. And I hang my head and I shrug my shoulders and go, well, it's not supposed to work out. And I'm trying to change that. If I can unlock that, maybe I will be, whatever that level of success is. By the way, that's a weird thing. Is it money? Is it fame? What's that thing I want? I don't know. I just want to live and not feel like I'm never invited to the big leagues. And I don't mean cast in Saturday Night Live. That doesn't mean in a movie. That just means like I always feel like you all go run down the hill, have some fun. I'll be over here. And then you all point at me and go, that guy was really good. He was really funny. What happened to him? Well, and I just go, nothing's supposed to work out. That's what I struggle with.
I think these are intertwining issues, and I'm more than happy to turn this into a mutual therapy session because that's part of what art is. But these are very intertwining issues, and one I think is very specifically about what 8984M is asking about, and Jennifer already touched on this, about the importance of identifying why do you want to create art. Because we can talk about art in this sort of beautiful, flowing way, get past your fear, just make a mark, express yourself, find your truth. That stuff is all true and all absolutely necessary. But I think what is difficult is to be extremely honest with yourself about your goals. Do you truly just want to create something beautiful, or do you want to make a living? Do you want to have friends, family, other people see this? Do you want to have strangers turn to you and go, I see you? Or do you just want to have strangers turn to you and go, that was amazing, I see how talented you are? Do you want to, like, on a real practical level, break into a field? There are only going to be so many extremely successful novelists who, like, have, you know, books in airports. There's not that many of them. Do you want to be one of them? Is that the goal? I think we're all very uncomfortable with being honest with ourselves about the goals, because I think there is a lot of societal pressure in both directions. One is, if you're a novelist and I can't find your book in every bookstore, are you really a novelist? Have you done anything I've heard of? You get that pressure of, unless you've made it the biggest big you can be, then you're not really the artist you say you are.
Yeah.
Right.
Then you get the other cultural pressure that I'm sure you've been exposed to, Jennifer, but Ken and I have talked about it a lot because it was embedded in the way that we were raised, of a shame in wanting to be successful. I'm sure you've experienced that as well. But I think a lot of us are trapped in this. The secret truth of we're all encouraged to reach for the highest accomplishment and also be ashamed of it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I think really finding in every creative pursuit you do, and it is not easy to go real honest, no judgment to myself. What do I want? And sometimes I want to just be like, I want to make, you know, a little video on YouTube. And if 1,000 people watch it and people I like go, that was great. That's what I need today. And other times I'm like, why the hell did I make this unless I can get it out to the biggest of big leagues possible? Mm-hmm. And I think finding a way to be honest with yourself about what the goal is helps with the fear and the doubt. A lot of different places and to go with that. But I also want to take it back to Ken, what you were saying. I think that you've got, I think you're wrestling with some of those, like, let's define what the goal is, what you want out of it.
Right.
Mm. Because we've had this conversation and sometimes about Force Center where you will feel like, we didn't, this other person got this other thing.
Yeah.
And then, but then from my perspective, I was like, but I never wanted that thing.
Right.
Mm.
I'm really happy with the success we have. And we've even had moments where I've asked you, Ken, like, did you want that?
Right.
And then you'll be like, nah.
Yeah,
it's not actually the goal I wanted for Force Center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I feel bad that I didn't have it. And I think that's where these kind of issues that are very natural about art and I think deeper issues, which are totally understandable about feeling excluded.
Yeah.
And feeling easily excluded are dovetailing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feeling easily excluded is a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel that way too. Of like, I got deep seated rejection issues that I got to be really careful with because they will lead me to very, very bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
If I let them. But then also trying to be honest about like, well, yeah, I'm jealous that somebody else has that, but then it's kind of a relief to go, but did you actually want that? And like, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
So why should I care? Which I'm not that way about a lot of things. There's, I think the hardest thing for me is I have been extremely lucky to create a lot of things, have the time and space and support to create things and to make money off of creating things. But a lot of my life is motivated by, I want to reach a bigger audience. I've had the joy of reaching this level of audience. Now I want to reach a larger audience because I feel like I deserve it. And in particular doing theater, it disappears.
Yeah.
You can have a play or you can have a taping of it and it kind of exists. But like that's the reason that I really pivoted to doing other things besides theater because it's so ephemeral and it goes away. And just having the either the strength or the egomania, depending on who you ask, to go, I would like to create some things that exist that lots of people see and then exist after I die. That'd be great. I'd like that.
Yeah.
Jennifer, get back in here with your thoughts on defining your goals in art.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point with theater because my husband once, I was frustrated about auditioning, whatever. And he's like, well, you don't have to be a commercial actor. You can do theater. You can still act. You can teach acting, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways. And you really have to ask yourself, like you're saying, specifically, what do I want? Some people have full-time jobs and they have hobbies, right? Where they paint or they create music in their spare time. And it really is just because they want to express themselves in that way. For some of us, I had this conversation with my friend who's a writer. I am an artist through and through. I have to create. I have to create in order to live. All the jobs besides serving that I've had have been creative. And so I'm trying to make my living by being an artist. And the biggest thing that I can see, the biggest through line that I've seen with the successful people that I've encountered, like I've mentioned before, like Forrest Gump, is they all have, whether they were hosts, whether they were producers, writers, directors, actors, they believed that they deserved to be there. Mm-hmm. They believed that they deserved to be heard or in that room.
whether it's auditioning. They're not looking for somebody else's approval. It's all coming from themselves. And I think that that's the hardest thing as an artist is it's like, oh, look at my painting or, oh, look at my video. Do you like it? That makes me feel better and that makes me want to do more. Mm-hmm. And we really have to separate ourselves from that external validation, which is kind of what I said before. It's like, it's the process. It's the creative process that needs to be fulfilling enough. And it is about connecting, like you're saying, Joseph, with other people. Oh, let's have this shared experience. If you watch this movie that I created, right? And oh, this is a really kind of communal moment for us. But that's where I feel like I get into dangers of like, oh, I had a callback. Oh, I had a producer session. Oh, they like me. No, they just think that I'm right for this role. Right. Mm-hmm. And then when I don't get it, oh, they didn't like me. So it's so difficult. It's such a mental thing. And if you can tell yourself that you deserve to be there, you deserve to be working or successful or whatever it is that you want to be, I think that that will be really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it's so important. And I think it is kind of it gets repeated. So it can feel kind of hackneyed. But it's true. I think you have to make things that you want to, you have to, with some of the career stuff, I think you have to accept that there is the show and the business and the show being the art and then the business, there's always going to be weird, ugly stuff, particularly as you get more successful. And I don't mean ugly in terms of being like, actually like, victimized, assaulted. I mean, just like the ugliness of you've created this beautiful, shining little thing that's like I've carved out a little sliver of my soul and I've turned it into a script and I'm trying to share it with the world. And then you get somebody waltz in and going, do I think that soul sliver can make me money or not? That's hard. Mm-hmm. That tension between those things is hard. But I have a lot of writer friends in LA who have very kindly, I think, helped me really focus on you control what you control, which is you can control that you make something beautiful that you want to share and that you believe in. Mm-hmm. And then all you can do to get it shared more widely is try and try and try and try. But you can't control who says yes or no. And that's a hard truth. But I think it's an important one. And I think it's the one that sometimes our narratives of success become so-and-so was born and they were destined. Like, no, they weren't.
No, they weren't. Yeah.
They worked hard and they got lucky. Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful and they're an amazing soul, but a lot of us are. Mm-hmm. And you work hard and you get lucky and you take your shots and you don't hide yourself. Be bold, put it out there. That's what you can control.
Yeah.
Ken, what are your thoughts?
I think you're all right. And I'm going to run away. It's funny. The separate yourself from external validation, which by the way, external validation is pretty damn cool. And feels
great.
I was just a friend of mine teaches a stand-up. He's been off and on with me for years. Not what you would define as a successful comic, which he had to come to terms with, right? And again, ask what you want out of it. It's a big thing. And Joseph's very right. There's a lot of moments of like, we didn't get invited to that event. Joseph would be like, do you want to go to that event? No. You're not. why did we not get invited? And it comes from, I didn't make the baseball team. You know, my mom said that moment, she goes, I watched you look at that name. You look for your name. And I watched you not get it. And I watched you walk away crushed. And I'm like, great. Did you do anything to help that? Cause that's another podcast. And that feeling repeats over and over. So separating from that external validation and knowing, all right, I didn't make this team. I didn't make my ninth grade team. What can I do to make the 10th grade team? That's the healthier approach. It's not easy. It sounds like bumper sticker thing, but that's just as simple as that. And my friend Craig he just had an Instagram video up of one of his changes as a comedian was knowing that he can only control so much as a comic and don't want to blame the audience, but the audience is, they're humans with their own perspectives and wants and desires and freedom. And you have to separate yourself from external validation. And that's my friend Craig sitting in a coffee shop in Northridge talking about it. 2 days later, I'm watching a relatively recent interview with Mark Maron, one of my favorite comics, and Annie Letterman, and it's her show. And Mark Maron, a modern day legend for me in stand-up, was talking about he only recently found how to do that.
Wow.
And how, he said there was one night in the main room of the Comedy Store, he just knew the audience was only going to go so far, not just with him, but with every comic there. And because normally in my young year, I would get angry and I'd be upset and I'd drive away just pissed. He goes, that night I didn't. I just drove away because I knew it wasn't me. And wasn't also not them finger pointing them. It was just like, that's the way it was that night. But I know what I want to do and I know what I want to do up there. And that's it just in comedy. But I think I'm trying to apply because I'm getting better at that spot where I'll go do a set and Mark will text me, hey, how'd your set go? And I'm like, you know what? I didn't get a ton of laughs, but I did everything I wanted to do on stage. And when I walked back in the green room, the other comics went, hey, man, great set. And that's external validation. But the validation really was I did what I planned to do tonight and I wasn't knocked off course by feeling I didn't belong or that no one liked me. And if I can find those moments, I want to try to build on them. That's where I'm at.
I think it's really great. Yeah, it's really great. And it's a difficult balance because I think, yeah, by creating art, particularly anything that demands a response, like people have to watch your video or laugh at your jokes at some point for to be successful. But for you to be coming from a place of why am I doing this? Why, you know, if your goal is just to get laughs, then it's going to be harder for you to find something truthful, which in the end will make it harder for you to get laughs.
Yeah.
I think it's that interesting circle, you know?
Yeah. And to make it as real, but not as specific as possible to keep names out. But I 2021, I launched a YouTube channel with some good friends and still love them to death. But I had gone through a switch and the world was changing drastically and I wanted to do it. So I sat down and did long form interviews that addressed social issues and personal battles. And I wanted to do that. It wasn't like I wanted to do quote important work. I was like, this is where I'm at in my career. Mm-hmm. And on our own channel, which wasn't a highly viewed channel, I had the least views of anyone. No one was watching. None of our regulars were some were there. I want to make sure I'm saying that, but, and my other friend was doing the show and just doing, racially insensitive jokes and fart jokes and dad jokes. And everyone was watching him and not me. And it's hard number one, not to be angry at him. It's hard not to be angry at the audience. And I have to remind myself to show up for the audience that's there for you. Show up for the people that show up for you is a big thing for me. And that's where the external validation, because I guess I had to stop my show. No one was watching it. And that's just the reality of the business. But it was hard not to take that personally, where I think now, 2 years later, I'm trying to unpack that and not take it personally. It wasn't like I wasn't invited. I wasn't easily excluded. I just was doing what I wanted to do. And shouldn't that have been the success? And that's where I'm trying to move forward with it. You guys are helping me.
Yeah. And I think this is where it gets into being bold and taking your chances and taking your lumps of that one experience of that channel with what those people were expecting with the competition at that time and the YouTube space, all those other factors help determine the reaction to that. And if you were like, that's what I want to do, and you kept trying it and kept approaching it, I think sometimes we find that we think people didn't like the heart of what we were trying to do or say, but it really was about the time and the place and the how you reach people and, the business of it. And because art, when it's truthful, is a little sliver of our souls, we're so sensitive about it, and it's so hard to just be like, maybe they hated this sliver of my soul, but maybe I just didn't reach, the right audience at the right time with this sliver of my soul, and it's not about the art, it's about the moment. So I need to try again.
Yeah, and then sometimes you look at it and you go, you know what? I had relenting standards and I should have unrelenting standards and done something more, formatted it better, got different. And then that's what the circle is complete.
I was thinking about a friend and I won't go into specifics, but basically on such a smaller scale, I'm like, oh, is this video going to work? But when you get to the big time and you're working with movie studios and you are directing and producing huge multi-million dollar properties, right? And you dedicate like 3, 4, 5 years of your life to make this movie. And then if it doesn't resonate with audiences, if for whatever reason, right? Maybe it's the competition at the box office. Maybe it's the who knows why something may not resonate or why something is a hit. I mean, I just can't imagine spending 5 years of my life moving my family, doing all this stuff, and then having the movie bomb. That, and then you're dealing with the studio. That is like, whew, you have to be able to bounce back from that. I'm not at that level. I can't imagine that. So anytime I start freaking out with my little video, I'm like, oh, I don't have to worry about that stuff. This is the freedom that I have as a smaller creator, is trying new things In the words of Kobe Bryant, it's not about failing, winning, or losing. It's about learning. What am I going to learn from this? If it did really well, why can I figure out why it did so well? Or if it didn't do well, what is it about the format or maybe the pacing was off? How can I learn from my, you know, my wins and my losses, so to speak?
I think that's great. And I think that's such a great distinction that you make, because I think at a certain level of fame and pressure and spotlight, yep, a stumble can hurt you. A huge director, you know, has a stumble, they can often recover from that. As we know, some men are allowed more stumbles. So there's all sorts of stuff going on there. But I think for a lot of us, I love what you're saying, Jennifer, at, you know, particularly if you're at a point where just like, I want to try, I want to get my voice out there, I want to express myself and see how it goes. Some of the other great advice I've gotten is like, it is both heartening and very encouraging. No one's paying attention.
Yep.
Which means if you don't spend a bunch of time broadcasting them, no one knows about your failures. Or the whole point is, there's such fear and shame in the thought of like, what if I make a short film for YouTube that I'm really put a lot of work in and proud of, and then 500 people watch it? Well, what shame? Like, there'd be no shame because nobody watched it. Nobody knows,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Even with like, I assume that people kind of intrinsically know, because it's life, of how brutal film festival competitions are. This one I made with Phil Amar, I just made whatever I wanted to make, and I knew like, ooh, this is going to be hard. It doesn't fit in easily. It's hard to program. I went with the artistic experiment of like, I'm not gonna put any label on it. I'm just gonna put it out there. And as soon as I finished it, it was like, that felt great. And oh no, you have hosed yourself for film festivals. And I have gotten a pile of rejections. But then I've got a couple of really, really great, like this match, this festival, and they loved it and they celebrated that one. I went to Portland and a couple of Four Center listeners came and I talked all about the success of getting into that one festival. And that's what matters. That's what people hear. People know. I'm sure if people stop to think about it, which they're not, even people who love me and support me aren't like, it's Tuesday, I need lunch, and I'm wondering if Joseph's film has been accepted in festivals. Like, thank you for your support. I love you. That's not the way we think about each other. It isn't, right?
Right.
Jennifer, when your video scrolls along, I'm like, Jennifer's telling me about Cabbage Patch people, kids eating people. I don't look at the numbers.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't wonder, do you have one that failed? You know?
Right.
And you're a coworker and a good friend. Nobody's out there, unless you're huge, 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 nobody's out there with a scorecard. Mm-hmm. And that is both setting and relieving, because it takes the pressure off.
Exactly.
People will see you when you have a breakout success. And people will give you grace to know that we're all trying and some things aren't going to hit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Well said.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I think we've answered most of the questions and some other ones. And had a general therapy session. Should we have our closing statements on this question?
Here, I'll take it back to the questions. It's ongoing and you'll never really unlock the answer. You'll unlock part of the answer. 8984M. That's what it is. And I've changed a lot and changed my approach, and I know where I need to improve and I know what I want to do, but I also want to try new things. And it's ongoing and the lessons never end. You can only try to be the better version of yourself the next day, both in art and life is what the goal.
That is absolutely great. I'll share mine so we can wrap up with Jennifer. We went lots of places, but I want to be sure to address 8984M's question. Here are a couple of things that helped me push past the doubt and the fear and the practical. One is just a date or a deadline I can't shift. The earliest, you know, artistic stuff I did was theater shows, and you'd book them and then the show wouldn't exist. But you'd have to do it. I think finding ways to put a backstop on yourself so you have to do the art can be helpful. I think finding ways to enjoy the adventure. Sometimes when I'm getting scared to start, I think about art as diving off a cliff and figuring out how you're going to land. And the diving off a cliff is scary, but it's also fun because it's just so freeing of like, I can put any damn thing I want on this paper or this canvas. I'm just throwing myself off into it and finding finding ways to enjoy that freedom and make it fun to help you push past the scary thing. Final thing for me, I think I've talked about it on Other Center, but it's a big thing for me, having gone through some hard mortality times with my father-in-law passing away. My father is a brilliant artist, a visual artist. And he is, much like you, Ken, he has unpacked and is very aware of how much people told him you should only do something if you can be the best. And he was packed with that, like, well, why, there are other people who are better than me, so I shouldn't do this because they're better, you know? Right. And that is wrong in so many ways, because, you know, everybody's an individual. Mm. Anyway, the point that I'm getting to is we can all experience shame at wanting to find success, shame and doubt at, I want a spotlight put on me in this sliver of my soul. And I think this sliver of my soul that is art is worth other people looking at. What hubris. And I think the way past that is thinking about art not just as something you create for yourself, which I think is true, but thinking about art as a gift you give to other people. Mm. Think of the artists you love and think of how much your life would be negatively affected if Prince decided nobody needs to hear what I have to say. Mm-hmm. Think about, even on a smaller scale, of someone you love who played with maybe writing a poem and didn't do it, and they're gone now. Mm. What a gift that poem would be to just a few people. Art is a gift that you give to other people.
Mm. Absolutely.
Well, it should have ended on you. Shoot, that's so good. Oh my gosh. This is, yes. If you want to have the life of an artist, the biggest trap that I have seen throughout my life was I was told I was talented. And that means, like, you know, people would say, oh, you have a God-given talent. So then when I wasn't naturally good at something, I just wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And you can look at other people and other artists. Oh, well, they're just talented. They just naturally have that gift of drawing or whatever it is. But most of the time, no matter how talented you are, if you do not work incredibly hard and actually just do the work, nothing will come of it, right? I mean, it could be a great hobby that you enjoy, but if you want to make it your living, that's a whole other thing. It requires a tremendous amount of hard work, and maybe it's something new that you're trying, so you might need to take a class. But once you take that class, it's going to be time for you to jump off that diving board and into the water and just do it. And you're going to make mistakes, but that's how you're going to learn, and that's how you're going to grow, and you're going to be doing the thing that you've been thinking about and wanted to do, because so many people are so scared to do it. I have conversations with family and friends all the time who are like, oh, you're so lucky, you get to do that. I'm like, no, this is really freaking hard. But they have regret because they never tried. And now they're trying to figure out how they can try too. And that's the wonderful thing about the time that we live in, is that there's so many more opportunities. We have cameras on our phones. Can you imagine? Right? We have so much technology, that Photoshop and editing equipment, all these things at our disposal. There is no reason why anybody can't try and pursue their dreams. Well, there are some reasons why, but there are some reasons why, maybe it's economics and other barriers, but
yeah, no,
in theory.
Absolutely. I think, Jennifer, you ended beautifully by combining the true and the soulful and the very practical, which is what we all have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Well,
all right. Ken, final thought?
Final thought is, let's go home. I have some creating to do.
Well, all right. Go for it.
A lot of fun today. Deep stuff, big stuff. I'll work on naming some pets after Star Wars characters. All right, I'll get there. You can follow us. We're Force Center Pod, currently operating as Other Center, but we're found everywhere as Force Center on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We are on Hive. We are on Threads. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. We're on YouTube as well. Podcasts available in a lot of different spots. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I got to take out Stitcher because it's no longer there, because Stitcher's no longer there. Tune in and whole lot of spots. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4center and patreon.com/4center is where you can support us directly. Follow me at CadNapsock, and my website will have updated tour dates soon. Not doing a ton this fall, but October will be in New York with Mark Ellis during the week of New York Comic Con, and Christmas time up in Seattle. So information coming for that soon. And you can see me try my art. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
You can see me trying my art and my new adventure of diving into vintage and retro things from the 80s and 90s at Jennifer Landa 1138 on TikTok and at Jennifer Landa on all the other social media platforms.
Love that. Joseph, take us home. Thank you for leading us through some tough and important questions today.
Absolutely. They're wonderful, wonderful questions. And we can't wait to get to so many more wonderful questions that patrons have asked. And please keep them coming. You can find me on all the social media. My handle is at Joseph Scrimshaw, just about everywhere. Blue Sky in particular. It'd be great to have more people on Blue Sky. Instagram as well is one where people still seem to, you know, have fun sometimes, which I like fun. So find me there. I've got more information coming soon about where a couple of the short films are playing, in particular, The Nightmare Adorable, a short comedy horror film that I made with many wonderful, wonderful people, is going to be at the H.P. Lovecraft Festival in Portland, Oregon, the weekend of October 6th and 8th, 6th through the 8th, and more dates coming up soon. That is it. Thank you. I hope that we have had a good time finding some A's for these Q's of the other.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.